episode 486 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I didn't realize how much I'm missing hustle and leverage.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and it seems that all the old stuff is suddenly new again, at least for me.
Yeah, and well, we are kind of getting back on track as far as this season is concerned. It's the beginning of the fall season, but you wouldn't know that by all the things that are being announced and discussed out there amongst the interwebs. Let's go ahead and start off with the news for this week. But first, Edmund, why don't you go ahead and give us a disclaimer?
Whatever we talk about, whether it's episodes, whether it's news, it might contain stuff that you haven't heard yet, so you're liable to be spoiled. So we apologize in advance. And at least as far as the episodes, we've tried to give you at least a week or so to catch up.
That's right, we have. And I'm going to go ahead and get us started off right away with something that came in pretty much right after we wrapped up last week. And for those who are wondering why it sometimes seems like we are not talking about similar topics or grouping up stuff, it literally is as it comes down the news feeds throughout the week. I put it on a list, and I just kind of go along the list as it is. So this one is news about this Deadpool movie that they're talking about doing that's out there and kind of finally moving along. There was a date that was given, I believe, last time. Well, now we're getting news that the rating of the movie may be PG-13.
What were you thinking it would be R, I'm assuming?
Well, I'm thinking that as much as it makes economic sense to go with PG-13, we've seen how well or not so well that has worked for Wolverine. I think there are certain comic books and properties that work better if you have just a little more latitude. You don't have to go into, like, you know, hard R territory, but, you know, maybe having the freedom to maneuver is a good thing sometimes.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, John. However, keep in mind, I'd say at least two things. First off is that Deadpool is long gone from being actually the gritty bounty hunter type that he was originally introduced as and has become farcical in nature. So given that bend, it doesn't surprise me that they would not need to go for an R. And while I don't exactly want to use the term the mask in exactly comparing where I fear this movie might go, it's definitely going to lean more towards the mask than it will lean towards a Wolverine. So I think the PG-13 might be the good thing. And then don't forget, you know, superhero movies are hot. Everybody wants to go see them. So they want to make a movie that everybody can go see.
Yeah, I suppose so. And like I said, the economics don't surprise me. On the other hand, I'm wondering if with the plethora of superhero stuff out there these days, can't they kind of spread the joy, you know, go across the various demographics? Do we always have to go for the center? I guess we do.
Well, you know, I could see if you were talking about a Punisher remake or, you know, something that gravitated itself towards a more edgy thing. But, you know, Deadpool really isn't edgy, so I don't have a problem with that. And I think you'll get a lot more, you know, teenage type of, you know, audience as a result of that. So I think it's okay. I mean, yeah, I could see them throwing, you know, nudity or blatant gore into it, but I don't think the character needs that.
Hmm. Well, I guess we'll see what we get out of it. It's not like this is the Die Hard franchise after all. All right. Well, I'll also take the next one because it pertains somewhat more to my interests. Assassin's Creed Unity. That's right, the game that's going to be coming out in about a month and a half. The season pass for that is going to include a game set in China. And, of course, the Eastern Hemisphere has always been something that has been long desired as a setting for Assassin's Creed fans. In this case, it's going to be the first in what I guess is a hopeful side franchise or side DLC franchise, Assassin's Creed Chronicles China. And basically, it's supposed to be in the 16th century, and we'll have a female assassin that trained under Ezio from Assassin's Creed 2. And apparently this is a character that has featured in some of the ancillary material out there for the franchise. So this is what's a little weird about this is that it's not going to be a standard type of game. It's going to be more of a side-scrolling platformer, which is a little bit unusual. I'm thinking maybe something along the lines of Doctor Who, the Eternity Clock, for those who were unfortunate enough, I suppose might be the way to put it, to sample. But yeah, I guess we shall find out what that's like when it comes out. I guess the game is arriving on the 11th of November, and this content will be in early 2015. And if this is anything like some of the more premium DLC content, it will eventually be released on its own. So I will be looking forward to it. Hopefully others are as well. Edmund, why don't you take the next one, if you don't mind?
Certainly. This is just an update on a couple of our yet-to-debut new series this season. The CW has ordered three additional scripts for both Jane the Virgin and The Flash. So I will certainly admit that it's the Flash order that I'm much more interested in. I may check out Jane the Virgin, but it hasn't really been grabbing me so far. But it certainly seems that they are liking what is happening on The Flash. Yeah, certainly after the bumping it up from backdoor pilot to full pilot last year, and now ordering additional scripts. So even though it hasn't debuted yet, things are looking good for it.
I was going to say, what's happened to the mentality where they'd do, like, you know, eight episodes and then see how a show's doing? It seems like not only for this show, but for a few others, they've been really jumping back in lately. Like, the networks aren't gun shy the way they were, say, 2 or 3 years ago, when, you know, they wouldn't even order half a season on a show. They'd order like six episodes and see how it does before they'd tell anybody anything. What are your guys' thoughts on that? Because, you know, it seems like a pretty big shift that they're starting to, you know, basically give all these series green thumb, you know, thumbs up, and they're not even haven't aired yet.
Yeah, something like this is a lot less insane than, say, the Supergirl thing, where it's going right to series. But in this case, the CW, they're in one of those types of positions where they're always in a position where they kind of have it. They're all in on some of the things that they do. They don't have a lot of extra shows to put out every year, so once they get started, it's hard for them to justify not going for a full season. I don't think there's been any show that they've canceled early in recent years. So, but that being said, this is extra scripts. It's not yet extra episodes.
Yes.
So is this on top of the 13 that normally come for a freshman series? I don't know what they got as their initial run, but it's not a full pickup. It's just a little sign of faith, I guess you could say. At least that's how I interpret it.
Yeah, that's true. And I was just going to mention, there has been apparently on some of the CW series that came and went in previous years, there were instances where they did order additional scripts, and that is all that ever happened. I mean, the series did not. Emily Owens is the one that I just saw a mention of, where that is actually, I think, one of the few where it did in fact get canceled early, and those scripts did just sit in a drawer. So it does not mean they're necessarily.
On the other hand, it was.
Yeah.
It was that show, so,
yes,
you know,
exactly. Exactly.
I don't think anyone was surprised by that.
Yeah.
Gary, why don't you take the next one? I don't know if you watch the show or not, but it's new news.
I've caught bits and pieces, but Colin Farrell confirms that he's on board for the True Detective Season 2. That's interesting. Colin Farrell, the Irish actor, correct?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, well, the only show that I saw one movie that I guess was somewhat reminiscent of the feel of that was In Bruges, where he was where he was involved in trouble and stuff like that, and he does play a rather good desperate character. So I'm optimistic. I don't catch the series itself, but he definitely would make it more of an interest for me to catch it. So.
Yeah, I mean, I
guess we just see it. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I did watch all through that first season, and I'm cautiously optimistic. So I think it is a similar situation. I mean, I'm not sure if it's been absolutely. I think it may have been confirmed now, but Vince Vaughn was being heavily rumored as the other detective. And I think to a certain extent, I mean, even with the reconnaissance going on, I think some people were a little surprised at McConaughey and Harrelson in season one. You know, it seems strange to say now that McConaughey won his Oscar and all that, but certainly when it was in production, people were not expecting the performances and the buzz that it wound up getting. So there might be something similar going on here, because I think Colin Farrell is one of those cases where he hasn't necessarily had the roles where he could show off his chops. So we could be in for another surprise.
Okay. Moving on then to something that's a little closer to home. X-Men Apocalypse is the follow-up to X-Men Days of Future Past, and it looks like Bryan Singer is going to be coming back as director. So this will be the fourth film in the kind of sort of series that he'll have done. Two in the original X-Men continuity, and then Days of Future Past and its follow-up. So I think that has promise. What do you guys think? Gary in particular, any thoughts?
Well, you know, as far as telling a likable story, I think he does a good job as a director. I don't care how they stray from the original material quite as much as they do, but it's a good story. You know, I try to look at any sort of remake or spin-off, whether it's from a book or in this case comic books to a movie. I try to let them stand on their own, and they do stand on their own for the most part. So he did good work, and heck, they're popular as anything. They're practically a little money machine. You know, they just mints it out for Sony, I guess, has the X-Men franchise.
I
think it's a safe decision. I don't think he'll put out a stinker, so that's okay. But I would have liked to see someone else's take on it, honestly. I think we sort of know what we're going to get out of a Singer production. But that's not necessarily bad. It's just, different might be nice.
Mm. And Gary, I think I'm interested in your take on the next one here.
Yes, the rumors continue to swirl like a whirlpool around Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, the beginning of I don't know how many more taglines they're going to throw onto this movie before it actually is released, but Aquaman's rumored to look like a surfer dude. It doesn't really matter to me. It seems like it could, when you think about Aquaman's origin, he was left with his father to be raised in a lighthouse till his father passed on. So here's a guy who loves to swim, who's living near the beach. So the fact that he could, be a surfer kind of guy isn't much of a stretch for me, especially if they want to sort of modernize the character. He shouldn't be a monk by any means, So I don't. I think they're almost looking to stir up trouble when I see this kind of title on an article. But I don't think it's that much of a stretch. And hopefully, if they could not make it too goofy, it would make sense to me. It's very in character for Aquaman if he's a younger, even maybe in his 20s or 30, early 30s possibly. I don't want to see him as like a 50 surfer guy, but they haven't said what age that they're going to choose to make Aquaman. Because I know, for example, they've already talked about Batman going to be having been doing superheroing for a while now as Superman came on the scene. So Batman was there first. So Batman's going to be older. But I don't know what ages they're going to peg the supporting superheroes at. So if they keep him on the young side, I say why not? It modernizes the character a little bit, and it makes sense for somebody who's living at the beach.
Hopefully they will not have Jason Momoa, who is, of course, the one who is rumored to be cast for this or will be announced for this soon. Basically looking like Ronan from Stargate Atlantis, but acting like Keanu Reeves from Point Break.
Well, I was gonna say Patrick Swayze, but okay.
That might be too credible for what I was going for there. All right, moving on. This is quick. Last weekend, as per us recording here, the number one movie was The Maze Runner, a movie that did not get particularly good reviews, but apparently had enough readers of the book interested in seeing it. It was number one, and so automatically, as happens very often these days, the sequel was announced for 2015. So, there must be a very quick turnaround there.
Mm-hmm. Is there a sequel to the book?
Yes.
Yes.
And there's already three books, so of course, because that's the way it goes. Next one, Edmund, if you don't mind. I feel like this crosses many different paths here.
Yes, indeed. We had a rumor that, not a rumor, I guess, Roger Moore was interviewed on the BBC and just happened to mention that he had dropped by a very closed secret set to visit his friend J.J. Abrams, who was directing Star Wars, and was being very cryptic and talking about filming something with lots of mountain and snow. But of course, this you know, got people wondering if they're on Hoth, and certainly has me wondering, you know, whether they could find a role for Roger Moore. But apparently, the rumors are not swirling around that. It's just lots of ice and snow and speculation.
Well, and the studio is in England, correct? They're shooting at the
Pinewood,
Pinewood stages. So it's.
You see, here's my theory, is that J.J. Abrams has been tapped to take over yet another huge franchise, James Bond, and he's going back to Roger Moore in the... No?
If I was recording, I would have muted you already. I would have muted your button already if I could have.
Well, here's another thing that you'll probably want to mute me for. What do Stephen King, J.J. Abrams, time travel, and JFK have in common? That's right, a new series on Hulu. Yes. As with so many Stephen King properties, trying to become the other side of the every single channel must have a Stephen King series on it. They did not learn anything from Under the Dome.
Apparently not.
So J.J. Abrams is going to be producing...
Based on a one paragraph.
Yeah. So here we are, a miniseries that is... wrapped around time travel and the assassination of JFK, mm-hmm. the book or story being 11/22/63.
Yes.
So a 9-hour miniseries based on the novel from 2011. Reading the description here, a high school English teacher who travels back in time to prevent Kennedy's death. So Outlander in Camelot.
Mm-hmm.
An English teacher.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
English.
Book repository, yes, teacher. I see possibilities.
Yes, not a history teacher this time.
I thought that was supposed to be the librarian sequel.
Oh, yeah. Well, that series is coming out on TBS or TNT or whatever, so you'll get your moment. Edmund, why don't you take this one as well?
Certainly. In the realm of more rumors about other major ongoing franchises, there is a rumor that the current draft of Star Trek III will include a scene between the original Kirk and the original Spock, played by Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner. So we will have to see if Bill has insisted that if Leonard's in the reboot, he has to be in the reboot too.
I have late-breaking news on this very story. I'm glad it was brought up.
Good.
Okay.
William Shatner has also chimed back on this rumor and states that at the moment it is categorically false. He has not been approached in any way, shape, fashion, or form to appear in this movie.
That sounds a lot like presidential candidates who claim that they have no plans on running.
Well, yeah. You know, we joke, but at the same time, you know, he has been painfully absent from the franchise when many other people have had cameos or other interests, you know, both through the TNG TV run, mm-hmm. which had several original cast members make a visit, as well as, you know, as well as the new movie where Spock came in as opposed to Kirk, because they basically said Kirk is dead and we will never use him again. I believe was the gist of what Abrams said. So I realize Orsi's running it now, so maybe that rule, the JJ rule, is out the window. But as Shatner's Twitter feed has said, they have not contacted him as of yet.
So. Okay.
I personally hope that it's not true. I mean, I got the reason why they had Spock in the first reboot film, because it was a link between the two alternate universes / timelines, whatever have you. But the fact is, we don't need to revisit this, at least in my mind. I understand there are going to always be people that want that sort of thing as a...
And it will be the 50th anniversary, too. So.
Oh, okay, that's true. That that might play into this, but who knows? Maybe it'll be Generations 2, because that'll work. All right, moving on then from that horrifying prospect. Boardwalk Empire star joins Marvel's Agent Carter. Now, when I first read that headline, I thought to myself, really? Steve Buscemi is coming to Agent Carter? But no. Instead, it is Shio Wingham, I believe is the guy's name, who's going to join the ranks. He played Eli on Boardwalk Empire, and he'll be playing Roger Dooley, the man who oversees Agents Carter, Thompson, and Sousa. We're not talking about the episode quite yet, but those who already saw a little taste or got a little taste of what Agent Carter could be like as a miniseries this winter in the premiere, season premiere for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah.
That's all I can really say about it. It's just, yeah, it's looking like it's shaping up to be some big stuff here.
And as a longtime Mets fan, I do have to mention that I believe his first name is Shea.
It's hard to tell. Okay. Mets fans, jeez. Just for that, Edmund, you get the next one.
Okay. Okay. Well, in this fabulous pairing of talent, NBC and Adam Sandler have teamed up to adapt the 80s teen comedy starring Val Kilmer, Real Genius, into a TV series. Lord, I'm not up on my industry terms. Yes, the project has been given a script commitment plus penalty. I guess that means they have to pay them if they don't put it on, which we will have to see if that's worth it to them or not.
Read that next sentence and observe it for a second. Let's take this idea, Real Genius. Hey, let's do that again. But
yeah, no. So we will adapt it into a new modern day series as a single camera workplace, not school comedy, written by the co-executive producers of Parks and Recreation. So there is at least potentially some good comedic pedigree behind this.
There are just some things that you don't need to do. I mean,
yes, I know.
The movie works fine. Yeah. They don't need to do this again. The new Real Genius will center on the relationship between a rock star-like genius and the sheltered, naive coworker. Again, why call it that?
Yes.
Other than just to... It has nothing to... Oh, okay. Yeah. Why am I going further into this?
No.
I don't need to. Gary, help me. Move on to the next one.
All right. Okay, no problem. It's something I'm looking forward to in an odd way. But anyway, we're talking about Star Wars Rebels is going to debut even earlier on Disney XD after killing the extremely successful and award-winning Clone Wars series. They decided to... introduce a whole new series, which I believe will be intricately tied to the new movie arc, and they're going to be releasing it on Friday, September 26th, so it's right around the corner, or if you're catching this podcast a little bit late, it just happened, so go back and look. Anyway, they've re-sculpted the series to match the upcoming movie. It is not a continuation of the Clone Wars. It's very... visually different with several different character designs. It's focused on a lot more on unknown characters that we haven't seen before. They are supposed to throw in cameos here and there, but generally it will be about a different sort of section of the Star Wars universe. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm still in mourning over Clone Wars. It was such a tremendous series, but I'm willing to keep an open mind. And even though they're getting rid of the entire extended universe, I will still try and, you know, give these new adventures a try.
Yeah, I'm willing to look at it and see how it is. I think I mentioned maybe the previous episode or the one before that I'm reading the quote-unquote prequel to this right now. So hopefully, number one, I'll finish it before then. But it's getting a little bit better. I'm about halfway through, and it's picking up a bit. But I think it might help for me to see it as intended on screen in order to get that sense for the characters that I think maybe the book just isn't giving me right now. I think maybe it was intended for one to see the beginning of the show and then kind of come to the book as a prequel after you're already a little familiar with the characters. I feel like that would probably help. Edmund, I think that you would probably be interested in this next one.
Certainly. We have a new adaptation on the horizon. The Kim Stanley Robinson's Mars trilogy is being adapted by one of the executive producers for Game of Thrones, he is apparently bringing it to Spike TV. So I don't know how testosterone-laced this is going to be. And it's also interesting that, of course, the Sci-Fi Channel is not winding up with a major science fiction property. And it does amuse me that this is coming from one of the Game of Thrones co-executive producers, because this is another of those series, like The Song of Ice and Fire, that's been sitting on my shelf waiting for me to read it. And I guess they are once again going to force me to read some good books before I see how they do them on TV.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that they're on your shelf. I turned to my right, and there they are. I did, however, read these about 10, 15 years ago, and I can tell you right now, it's a really good, solid read.
Yes.
One of my favorite trilogies out there. Thankfully, it was before he went full tilt climate crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the because a lot of his books are now very heavily ecological.
Yes.
In nature versus this kind of broad science fiction type of idea. But at any rate, this is a really good trilogy, and I'm looking forward to seeing them adapt it for it is weird for it to be on Spike TV, but as we said before, it seems like everyone wants to get their kind of hands in these adaptations and such.
Yeah.
Let's see. Next one is this is interesting to me. BBC America has announced a new drama series, a 8 episode series called Tatao, I believe it is, I don't know.
It's I thought it was Tattoo. I thought they were finally going to see the other side of Fantasy Island.
It might be. Basically, this is about Kyle and Budgie, okay, 20-something friends from London that set off to travel the world, and ahead of the journey, Kyle gets a Maori-style tattoo to celebrate their eventual destination, the Cook Islands. When he gets there, he finds the dead body of a local girl tied up underwater, only to find her corpse has disappeared by the time that he brings the police, but he knows what he saw, and so they get he and his friend, as they try to uncover what happened, find themselves sucked, as it says here, deeper and deeper into a world of Maori myths, symbols, and hallucinatory visions, until finally the full meaning of Kyle's tattoo is revealed. So it may actually be pronounced tattoo, you may be correct, but it's T-A-T-A-U, so I'm not sure how that's pronounced in Maori, but I just like the idea of this kind of digging into the mythology of a different culture, probably obviously fictionalized to some degree, but just playing around in some very unfamiliar territory.
Oh, and you didn't mention it, but as a side note, this is being done by the people that brought us, I believe, the UK version of Being Human.
Co-produced by, yeah, the same company that helped produce Being Human, so yeah. Let's see here. Gary, why don't you take the next one?
Absolutely. Sci-fi, or sci-fi if you prefer, is renewing both Defiance and Dominion. It's surprising to me because I didn't think they were drawing big numbers, or at least I didn't have that sense, but they're having stable enough audiences that it's worth them doing. So that's good. Any science fiction that we can get out there, in my opinion, is good and will help expose the genre to even more people, even though it seems like it is enjoying a bit of a renaissance lately. Defiance and Dominion both lean a little bit more towards a little harder science fiction, so I'm enjoying that. So I'd like to see that continue. And I'm curious, does that mean that there will be another Defiance video game coming out? Time will tell.
Yeah, it's an ongoing MMO, so I'm sure it just means that we'll continue to have fresh content. Defiance, definitely, I know that we've talked about a lot here. Dominion is the one about the war between angels that I never really got into, but I know that our friends over at Pod Culture seem to get into it, so I'm sure that they'll be happy for this news. Edmund, why don't you take this next one, as I think you probably can speak to it better.
Certainly. Yeah, this is the other True Detective news that Rachel McAdams has been confirmed and as the female lead for the second season of New Detective. And as opposed to what I said earlier, I guess I'm not up on my rumors. Yeah, apparently, I believe Corin Farrell is definite, and but Vince Vaughn apparently is not. And now the other rumor is that it's Taylor Kitsch, who was on Friday Night Lights, most notably, is expected to come in. But it does seem that apparently they are going to stretch out these casting rumors and milk as much publicity out of that as possible. So, but certainly in this case, I mean, Rachel McAdams is, I think, a very good get for the second season. I've really, really enjoyed her work ever since she first came to my notice in Slings and Arrows, that Canadian series about Shakespeare Festival quite a few years ago.
Wow, yeah, that's nice. I like that reference. All right, and Gary, our final news item for this long list of new and exciting articles. This one I think you'll be happy about, at least some.
I, I was thrilled to see this, and you know, it makes me appreciate things a bit more, and I'll get into that in a second. We're talking about we're going back to sort of what I was waxing on before was about unfinished Star Wars, the Clone Wars episodes released online. Now, we had a first batch of these. They went directly to Netflix. They were supposed to air, but Disney pulled them from ever airing. They were finished ones, and there was, I believe, four of them, and they aired on Netflix. It was free, you know, with your subscription, and they were, you know, standard, really good episodes. Now we found some more. They're not quite full episodes. They're more of, if you want to consider them, storyboards. They're extremely rough animation, but they do get the story across. Obviously, they were in production when they got the word that that they were going to stop doing doing Clone Wars, and it just shows how far along they were, that even after getting the kill notice, they still had four episodes finished, and they had these that were pretty much ready to go to rendering. So it's an unexpected benefit that they would release something unfinished. A lot of artists don't like to do that, but Dave Filoni was, I guess, I don't know how much if he agreed or at least acquiesced, you know, to let the fans of the series see just a little bit more of what was coming down the line and get a little bit more of the storyline. If you're a fan of Ahsoka Tano, which a lot of people were who watched the series, there is a little bit to do with her in these unfinished episodes that were released. They're free online at the Star Wars website, so you don't even have to have Netflix or Hulu or any other subscribing service. So I haven't had a chance to watch them yet, but they definitely will be watched within probably the next 48 hours because I miss this series that much.
Yeah, so have you watched these already?
I've seen a sample of them. I haven't sat down to watch all the episodes yet, but yeah, they're very crude, rough animation. It reminds me of when you see them talking about a Pixar movie and you watch the, I believe they call them pre-vis or pre-res. You know, for large intents and purposes, they're, you know, there's a background in the scene and the figures are moving around, but not like arms and legs so much as being sort of dragged around, almost if they were a cardboard cutout being moved across the scenery. So it's very rough animation. Like I says, it's more like you know, like the you know, when as you're doing the storyboard type of arrangement, but enough of it's there, so you'll get the story out of it, which is what I'm hoping for. They did also announce that yet another storyline that was actually finished but hadn't made any production will be released as a book later this year. So if you are a fan of Clone Wars, they still keep surprising us with some extra material that they had just ready to go and never did.
I wonder if they will consider that to be, because in broad strokes, at least, they are saying that the Clone Wars are still part of the new canon. So I'm wondering if that book that comes out will be a part of the new line or will be considered part of the kind of alternate Legends line.
That's a very good question, because they've basically said that everything that went before is going to be, you know, sort of adapted in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would assume that this is, you know, that the Clone Wars themselves were more than just extended universe material, that extended universe typically refers to the time, you know, post Jedi. So this happening well before and really being true enough to the actual cinematic movies that I don't feel it ever really contradicted any of the movies. I would imagine that, yeah, it will stay in continuity for those who care, but I don't think it'll be wiped under the rug. So I agree. I think it would probably fit in the book line because it's happening so many years before where the movie is going, even with, you know, talks about Vader flashbacks and stuff like that. You know, Clone Wars is well before, you know, the first three movies or the middle three movies, if you prefer.
Yeah. I understood, believe me. All right, well, I'll be looking forward to that then. We'll see how that goes. Well, that's it for the news this week, and that means that we have enough time, I think, for at least one or two of our usual show discussions. And, Gary, why don't you go ahead and choose our first show topic?
Oh, gosh, this is a rough choice because I want to talk about a few of them at the same time almost. But let's start with something new, and let's go visit Gotham City.
All right, and that would be Gotham, and here is the promo for the show at any rate.
I love this city, and I see it going to hell. Sometimes I think this place is cursed. But I won't let it fall apart without a fight.
Citizens of Gotham, we will not. We cannot let these killers and these robbers and these rapists and these thugs win. Not on my watch.
There is a war coming. A terrible war. There will be chaos. Rivers of blood in the streets, I know it.
It's my new partner, Jim Gordon.
You have a little danger in your eye. I wonder what you plan to do with that.
You killed people before?
That was war.
This is war! We're at war!
What's your name?
My name's Bruce Wayne.
I promise you, I will find the man who did this.
I'm learning to conquer fear.
Fear doesn't need conquering. Fear tells you where the edge is.
Somebody has to take over. It might as well be me.
Gotham is on a knife edge.
This is not a city for nice guys.
Stop or I'll shoot!
However dark and scary the world might be right now, there will be light. There will be light, Bruce.
Okay, and if you could do this amazingly huge recap, please?
No problem. These writers are just amazing for this show, and you can tell that by the title of the first episode, Pilot. Anyway, rookie detective James Gordon battles villains and corruptions in the premiere of this action-adventure series that takes place in a pre-Batman Gotham City. Our online reviewer, Nadine, gave this a 9.
Yes.
Readers gave it an 8.5 that we've had reviews already put into our site. And what say you, John?
I would give it probably an 8.
And Edmund, did you watch?
Oh, yes. I was thinking of an 8 myself.
Okay, and I would go just a touch higher with an 8.5.
All right.
But still, for a pilot, that's pretty strong.
Yes, it is.
It was a strong pilot. Yeah.
All right, well, why don't you go ahead and get us started then, since you already kind of got us kicking off here.
Sure, no problem. As the earlier description I read says, you know, this pilot predominantly focuses around James Gordon. At this point, he's not the police captain or the commissioner that we're used to dealing with in comic books or even the movies. This is early James Gordon. He's fairly new on the force. He's just been promoted to detective from, I guess, patrolman. And he's trying to do right. During the course of this, you know, he gets partnered up with a guy, I believe it's Harvey Bullock, who's sort of a long-term detective who's gotten his hands dirty and I think in the pursuit of trying to solve crimes and do good the best way he can, although it's not always following the letter of the law. I get a sense sometimes he's trying to fulfill at least part of the spirit, but regardless, he's still dirty. Then there's no way around that. And he's Gordon's new partner, and so Gordon's all of a sudden starting to deal with issues that he doesn't want to have to deal with. They are called to the scene of a murder that happens in an alley off one of Gotham streets, and it turns out to be Martha and James.
Thomas.
Who is it? Thomas. Yes, Tom. Is it Tom? Okay. Thomas Wayne, they're leading philanthropists and business people throughout Gotham. They are the power couple, might not be the right word, but everyone knows him. He's, you know, he's extremely prominent well known in the community. So much so that Bullock doesn't even want to touch the case because he knows it's just a hotbed and sort of wanted to avoid it. But it was too late because his partner, rookie detective James Gordon, is already interviewing people on it. So now he's sort of stuck with this high profile case that they have to try and solve. During the course of this, we meet some of Bullock's less than savory contacts, people, you know, running the organized crime that is extremely prevalent in Gotham City. And eventually they manage to solve the case, but there's a gear in the works that we think the person who was found guilty of doing the crime, didn't do it at all. And so it opens up a bigger mystery as well, not only into what, who did it to begin with, but why would people go to these lengths to try and close this case? And more importantly, why would the actual organized crime want to see this case solved? I thought they came up with some really interesting twists and turns, and I realize I've avoided the whole Batman issue, but I don't mind avoiding it because I thought they did such a good job with the story that you weren't reminded of it. Yes, the characters were there and they used all the right names and had enough of the look of each character. The young Penguin Cobblepot character was really spot on. Even the girl who will eventually become Catwoman, which is obvious, was well done. But I still never felt that I was missing out, like, where's Batman? I felt the Gordon storyline was going so well that I didn't mind not seeing Batman. It worked well for me. I enjoyed young Bruce Wayne and seeing a bit in live action of how the boy was slightly is driven as a result of his parents' murder. And I just overall, I liked it. It was good. I thought the script kept moving all along the way. And I enjoyed seeing everyone else but Batman. How about you guys? Did you miss seeing the cowl, or did they keep it going for you?
Well, for me, it wasn't so much that they I wasn't missing Batman because having, you know, known what the show was supposed to be like, I was just fine with them doing what they were doing. But I concurred a bit with Sky, who also over on our over on Vogue Network, that would be Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, for those who don't know. And he kind of came in at an 8 as well. And what he was saying was basically that it was the amount of the character cameos that was a bit heavy. And I will say, okay, there is one example where they did stray a bit. That would be Poison Ivy, and they gave a different name than what we're used to for that, although I'm sure that they can explain that later down the road. But just the sheer amount of characters – like he was saying, why would they not spread that out more throughout the season? I can see both sides of that. I feel like if they had spread it out throughout the season, that maybe it would have become the cameo of the week type of situation, which we kind of get a little bit of on Arrow or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But for the most part, that can be handled fairly well, so I'm not too worried about that. I am worried about overloading it so much now that you have to try and keep all of these characters kind of up in the air and weaving them in, and how is that going to work going forward? And that's more where I'm a little concerned.
Well, I can see that point, but at the same time, I like the concept that these aren't characters who just came into Gotham and started creating trouble for Batman. They are, you know, integral to the fabric. They've been around all along, just like he has, and that, you know, they just start to, I guess at some point, probably, you know, reach a point where they become significant issues. But, you know, I like the sense that, guess what? There was no major event that, like, you know, 100 villains moved into town all of a sudden. These people have been here all along, and Batman knows them. You know, we sort of joke around how, like, you know, he can sort of see into a criminal's mind or something like that. But I think this gives that sort of angle to give you an explanation of the reason why he knows these people and sort of has these quasi-intimate relationships with them, or intimate in some cases as storylines go, is that he's been around them his whole life. They, you know, they're part and parcel of Gotham just as he is. And I sort of like that I picture them, you know, woven into the tapestry of the city and not just, you know, somebody who came to town to cause trouble.
Yeah. I mean, I do recall that for the most part, maybe Batman Begins a little bit aside, most of these villains were supposed to have been already out there in some way, shape or form before Bruce Wayne chose to take on the mantle. And so it makes sense to emphasize the fact that they were kind of coming up and coming over a course of in period of time before you had Bruce Wayne going on his own journey away from Gotham to learn how to kind of handle it when he returned. I guess for me too, the question I would have is, great, we're focusing on these villains and we're making, you know, James Gordon the lead character and seeing it all evolve from his point of view, and I like that idea so much so that I really don't even know that we need to have any of Bruce Wayne at this point, other than as a kickoff. And yet I get the feeling that he is going to be in the background. And so for those who are having a hard time getting over the whole Batman thing, this is going to be like that constant reminder, that you know, thorn in the paw, so to speak, that's just going to keep on poking that particular issue. But for me, it's kind of like, get over it. You know, it's, that's not what the show's about.
If I could get through Smallville, this is a lot less harder pill to swallow than that was. So.
How about you, Edmund? What were your impressions? You gave it an 8.2, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. I thought they did do a very good job of setting things up without it feeling too info dumpy or having to get out the exposition. And I guess to a certain extent, I mean, that part of that is the fact that they are dealing with such an established property. And certainly, I mean, I think part of what helped it succeed so well was that they were also introducing some rather well-established TV tropes in terms of Gordon as the honest cop coming into this corrupt police force, certainly having Donald Logue there as his partner and the sort of main instigator in terms of trying to get him to go with the program, even though I thought that, you know, they did do a very good job of establishing him as yes, someone who's corrupt, but with that sort of hidden heart of gold, without that making sound, without that becoming too cloying or preachy, and of course, for all of us who mourn the loss of Terriers after just the one season, it's always good to see him back on TV, and certainly hoping that doesn't presage anything similar for Gotham. But I certainly don't see that happening now. And as far as the cameos and the little bits, the characters popping up, I my impression in terms of the way they set it up by the end was that was more something for the pilot for this introduction, and because certainly in terms of the way the story was going, and certainly given the strength of the performance, and I know I'm the one who's usually always trying to make sure I look up the actors, but I can't remember the guy playing Cobblepot, I think is, you know, they I think they've recognized that they've got a very strong actor here who can really do very good justice to that role, and it certainly looks like for this initial section that they are going to be using him as their primary villain and their primary person to drive the story forward, while these other characters may fade more into the background and you know, may not even appear for a while. And although one thing that did kind of surprise me, and I'm not an expert on all of the different variations of the Batman origin story, but having Selina Kyle there in the alley, for a second I was really wondering if they were going to pull something of her saying something or distracting the guy, so that in essence she wound up kind of saving Bruce Wayne, that the guy was going to shoot all three of them, was meant to shoot all three of them, and then got scared off somehow, which they didn't quite do, but that actually did get me a little intrigued, and also wondering if that could have been a little twist in the origin story that perhaps we hadn't seen before.
Yeah, I don't recall that being part of any of the standard origin stories, but there have been so many variations on that theme that it's hard to tell. Gary might know better than I do.
Yeah, no, this is the first time that she was ever introduced as a witness to that scene. Mm-hmm. There's been a few different versions where, yes, one or more people have been there, including Batman himself, oddly enough, in an odd I believe it was sort of mystical with a character called the Phantom Stranger, but it typically is the, you know, the archetype, you know, classic, you know, as I said, they're walking home. I was curious to see what movie they were going to be seeing, but they never actually touched on that in the comic books. It was typically Zorro, but I was curious if they were going to list a movie, but they didn't this time around. So, but yeah, I thought it was handled well. The Pearl scene dropping from the mother is also another classic trope of the story that, you know, that they chose to pick up on, which I thought was nice. So, as far as being a comic book fan, I think I'm very comfortable with the way that they're using and adapting the source material. I don't usually feel that way, and hopefully they can keep that up.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see, anything more that we want to say about Gotham?
I liked, there was a speech at one point, and I think I'm going to butcher the guy's name. I want to say Malone, but that, I don't think that's quite right. He was the, who turned out to be the person that turned out to be the head of organized crime in Gotham.
Falcone?
Falcone, yes. And even he notices how there, you know, there's a problem with the city, and that the city needed to have, you know, this Wayne murder solved because it wasn't good for the city. And then Cobblepot, who's the Penguin character, I'm not sure how we'll start referring to these people as the storyline goes on, but even he mentions the fact that, but even Falcone is losing control of the city. The city is starting to get so, you know, unlawful that, you know, Falcone, who's supposed to be the big muscle, can't keep control of everybody anymore. The city's just flying apart. And so, you know, it's interesting. Is this going to be sort of a run to the city becoming so dysfunctional that it would arrive at Batman? So so it'll, in a sense, deconstruct a bunch of things. It'll be interesting to see.
Fair enough. All right. Well, we have a little bit of time left here. Edmund, if you have something on the list here that you think we could get through relatively quickly.
I think given what's on this list, perhaps you two could hit the latest episode of Haven.
Okay, sounds good. Let's go ahead then and run the promo.
I can't leave Haven.
William and I are not done.
Audrey is Mara, and right now Mara is doing everything she can to destroy this place.
Why are you doing this?
Don't get in my way.
This will be unpleasant.
Haven, all new this Thursday at 8, only on Sci-Fi.
All right, and Gary, if you could take this one again.
Absolutely, I'd be glad to. We're talking about Haven, Season 5, Episode 2, Speak No Evil. A death strikes a hard blow to Duke. Nathan, meanwhile, refuses to believe that Mara has totally taken over Audrey. And Dwight is left trying to keep Haven together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what would you give this one, do you think?
I will go with a 7.
Okay. And I went with... I suddenly can't find it. Where did my document go? I went with a 7.5, so not too far off. So why a 7 on this one? Because you were a little bit more excited about the previous episode, where for me this is actually a jump up from the premiere. So we kind of crossed the streams here a little bit.
Jeez, I'm not sure where to go with this. I feel like the whole Mara plot is sort of stuck somewhere, if no pun intended, that we're not moving forward with that character at all. She's, you know, still running around and, you know, she's basically sort of going, you know, boo, boo, boo to everybody. And it just, I'm not enjoying the sort of pause that we're in. Meanwhile, we got a trouble introduced, which felt awkwardly like a trouble of the week. And it just seemed lacking. Also, having Dwight have, not that he doesn't have prominent roles, but he had so much a strong role in this that it seemed to draw the focus away from this, from, you know, discovering still more of the true nature of the troubles and the overarching arc. I didn't feel like I got a lot out of that. That arc, and it seemed like they were pulling away from it a little bit. What do you think about it?
Yeah, for me, I think the reason this worked better is because where I didn't realize that the first episode was going to be kind of leaving a lot on the table narratively for the next episode, this one took a lot of the things that I felt were unfinished and actually gave them some scope. Like, most notably, the whole Duke thing. Finally made sense. I mean, it made no sense to me at all. I made no connection between the trouble and Duke's emotional state in the premiere, but I guess it was more the second episode, this one, that I felt like they tied it together far better. And that being the case, I guess it was a good way to have closure for the Jennifer character.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, when we didn't see her in the first episode, I figured that she wasn't going to be prominent this season at all, so...
Yeah, but that, just the fact that they kind of laid it out and put it to rest was kind of nice, and also used that as a way to explain what's going on with Duke and all of that. So yeah, it worked better for me. But to be honest, it's still not, you know, hitting all cylinders by any means. It's still got some work to do, but it was enough to get above average for my purposes. So it was an improvement for me. what's funny is that the two episodes we had very different opinions on, and yet they've averaged exactly the same. So that kind of puts it into perspective in that regard. Let's see, anything more to say about this one? I don't know that there is, other than clearly they're going to be very serialized this season, which is a nice touch.
And this is the season they're splitting, right?
Yes. So there we are. All right, well, we're going to go ahead then and take a pause here until our next show, and where we will be picking up a lot more of these season premieres as we move along. So until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.